So the statute talks about and defines qualified individual, and you can see the definition on the slide there. What I'll say about this is that the person must be able to accomplish the essential job functions of the position that the person desires or currently holds. And the statute provides that the employer's judgment will weigh into this determination of essential job functions, as will a written job description. So that's important for a couple of reasons, one of which to me is that the employer does not unilaterally determine that, right? That's something that is going to be looked at through at least a somewhat objective lens, weighing in the employer's judgment on their opinion whether the person can meet essential job functions. The other important aspect for us last year is the written job description aspect. Last year, when a lot of these employees were returning to work, the job descriptions they had been hired under did not really have any qualifications or job functions that would require the person to be in person. We saw lesson planning, preparing the room, keeping records, grading papers, all of these things which all teachers had done remotely in the spring of 2020. So there's the only one that I saw a number of times that might arguably require someone to be there in person was related to classroom management. And again, this was something that all the teachers in this state had done remotely in the spring of 2020. But so this is all from the statute, and the written job description will be important. And so I would imagine, and like I said, this hasn't come up for me as much this year, but I would imagine maybe some districts have been revising their job descriptions to make clearer in-person functions. Okay. And then finally, the undue hardship prong. So the employer does not have to provide an accommodation, of course, if it would impose a significant difficulty or expense on the employer. And so they would look at the nature and the cost of the accommodation, as well as the overall financial resources of the covered entity. This was not something that we heard from school districts a whole lot, that the work from home accommodation or even, you know, provision of air filters or things for the actual classroom, that those were an undue hardship. Most districts, when the person, you know, most districts did not use that excuse, in other words, if they were not able to meet the requested accommodation. So in December 2021, the EEOC did come out with a lot of new guidance on COVID and the ADA and disabilities. We look at the what you should know about COVID question list that all the people on my side of the bar, and I'm sure you all too, have been looking at since March of 2020 on what we need to, you know, what the employer is to provide for COVID, and now they've added a lot of new information at the bottom of that as of December 2021, including whether COVID is a disability. And what the EEOC says, as you can imagine, is that that's analyzed like any other health condition. And the COVID can be considered an actual, regarded as, or a disability of record, just like we talked about from the statute. So the EEOC says that the limitations caused by COVID don't necessarily have to last any particular length of time or need to be long-term. What the EEOC also says in here, however, is that transitory cold symptoms that are going to resolve themselves within a matter of weeks, those are not going to be considered an actual disability. The symptoms needn't be sustained, but may come and go and still limit a major life activity. So this is something that is not going to resolve itself within a couple of weeks, may resolve itself temporarily, then come back later and come back later. And those will be considered as substantially limiting a life activity to constitute a disability. So symptoms must actually limit the major life activity. The EEOC tells us that asymptomatic cases or mild cases are not going to qualify. And when we look at whether a person has substantially limited a major life activity, the EEOC is also telling us that you can make that consideration or determination without the use of mitigating measures. In other words, if the employee is able to not be substantially limited only by the use of an inhaler or an antiviral medication, that person still has a disability. In other words, we don't consider that mitigating measure, inhaler or medication, when considering whether they have a disability. So, as I mentioned, the EEOC does specifically set forth that COVID may constitute a record disability. So what the example that we would think of or that we would use, and this has actually come up, is a person who has had COVID and whose physicians are telling the employee that if they catch it again, it will be catastrophic, right? Because of their health conditions, a second case of COVID would be potentially fatal. So these people, an employer may want to treat differently because the employer does not want to risk the employee getting COVID a second time. And so perhaps pass up that employee for a promotion or some sort of job advancement. And the EEOC cautions against that. And that would be a discrimination based on a record disability. EEOC also talks about the no discrimination based on regarded as a disability. And again, someone who is regarded as having a disability related to COVID is not entitled to an accommodation. They've not requested an accommodation, but they cannot be discriminated against. In other words, for that person who appears to everyone around them to have long COVID and some sort of symptom that is manifest, on a consistent basis, but they've not requested any accommodation, the employer can't discriminate against that person by terminating them or any other way because of that regarded as disability.